Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Wednesday, September 9th. I'm in two fantasy football leagues this year. I did one draft last night, and then the other about a week ago. I've been playing fantasy football for over a decade at this point. And look, even if you don't play, I think you have to admit how big it's become. There's literally an FX sitcom about fantasy football called The League that ran for 7 seasons. The whole thing of fantasy football is an institution, but what I didn't know until this week is that fantasy football is actually older than the Super Bowl. All right, let's get into this one. In March of 1962, a man named Wilfred Winkenbach was on an East Coast road trip with the Oakland Raiders. Winkenbach went by Bill, and he was a limited partner in the team. He had a small ownership stake there. And that week, the Raiders were in New York, and Winkenbach was holed up in a Milford Plaza hotel with two other men, Bill Tunnell, who was the Raiders' public relations manager, and Scotty Sterling, who was a sports writer for the Oakland Tribune. Quick tangent, but does anybody else miss calling them the Oakland Raiders instead of the Las Vegas Raiders? I'm sick of Las Vegas getting teams. It's always going to be the Oakland Raiders to me, but I'm going to keep going here. The three of those guys, so Wilfred, or also Bill Winkenbach, Bill Tunnell, and Scotty Sterling, spent a rainy weekend hammering out rules for a game. Each person would draft real NFL players onto an imaginary team, and those players would earn points based on what they did in the actual games. So you'd go head-to-head with your friends each week, and whoever had the most points at the end won. Winkenbach had done this before. In the 1950s, he'd invented fantasy golf and fantasy baseball. Same concept, different sports. He was the kind of guy who, according to people who knew him, talked about sports constantly. At work, at the gym, literally everywhere. In the following summer, in August of 1963, the first draft in fantasy sports took place in the basement of Winkenbach's house in East Oakland. The first fantasy football league had 8 teams, and the name of the league was the Greater Oakland Professional Pigskin Prognosticators League, a name so absurdly long that everyone just called it GOPPL, G-O-P-P-P-L, or GOPPL, like I said. The very first pick was George Blanda, who's the Hall of Fame quarterback and kicker. That pick was made by a man named Andy Musalimas. The scoring in those days was, well, different. Offensive touchdowns were 25 points, field goals were 25 points, extra points were 10, and a special teams or defensive touchdown got you 200 points. Kickers were wildly overvalued, though to be fair, a kicker once won NFL MVP in 1982, so maybe they were just ahead of their time. But running the league was also a grind, because there was no internet, there's no apps, no push notifications, and so Bill Winkenbach, who was the commissioner, as you might have expected, would spend Sunday evenings calling the sports desks of the Oakland Tribune, the San Francisco Examiner, and the San Francisco Chronicle, all of whom received game statistics by wire. He'd stay on the phone as long as it let him, scribbling down the numbers. Then, he'd calculate everybody's score by hand. Monday at lunch, the 8 fantasy football team owners would meet, and Winkenbach would announce the winners and losers. The punishment for finishing last was real. Winkenbach had a trophy made, a wooden football face wearing a dunce cap. The original league rules even spelled it out. Quote unquote, lack of skill or study will afford the heaviest loser the yearly trophy, symbolic of the loser's ineptness in this grueling contest. Glad to hear they took this shit seriously back then too. The obsession was also real with fantasy football right from the start. Winkenbach and the other limited partners would sit together at Raiders home games. For the first few weeks of the season, according to Sterling, their main concern wasn't how the Raiders were doing, it was how their GOPPL teams were doing. GOPPL might have stayed a private club of the 8 Raiders insiders forever, except for Andy Musalimas, remember the guy who made the first pick, picking George Halas? Well, in 1968, Musalimas opened a sports bar called King's X on Piedmont Avenue in Oakland. And in 1969, he did something that nobody had done before. He took fantasy football to the public. He created 6 divisions at the bar. People could come to the bar, they could draft their teams, and compete against strangers. He also modified the scoring system a bit, and got himself kicked out of GOPPL for doing it. The old guard didn't appreciate him messing with the Winkenbach original rules. Well, it didn't matter, because the demand for fantasy football was overwhelming. Musalimas had to create a waiting list just to get in a league at King's X. Bars across the country started calling him, asking for the rules, and calls came in from Hawaii even. In 1974, King's X launched the first known ladies' division. For the next two decades, fantasy football spread through bars and friend groups and workplaces, but it stayed analog. Commissioners compiled box scores from the newspapers. They mailed out weekly standings, and they calculated the points by hand. It was a game that demanded serious commitment, which meant that it stayed small. But then the internet changed everything. In 1977, CBS Sportsland became the first major website to offer online fantasy football. It cost money, $99.97 per league. But the computer did all the math. It updated the scores in real time and even let you draft online instead of crowding into someone's living room. Although I will say personally to this day, when you draft in person with friends, nothing is better. But anyway, 2 years later, in 1999, Yahoo made its fantasy football product free, and participation exploded, as you might have imagined. That's when the NFL started to notice that fantasy football wasn't just a hobby. It was changing how people consumed the sport. Fantasy players didn't just watch their home team, they watched everything. Every game, every touchdown, every meaningless fourth quarter drive in a blowout. Because some third string running back on a team they didn't care about might be on their fantasy roster. The numbers back this up. A recent YouGov survey found that fantasy football players are three times more likely than the average NFL fan to watch 13 or more hours of football per week. Nearly a third of fantasy players describe themselves as very heavy viewers, consuming more than 13 hours weekly. These aren't casual viewers. They're the league's most valuable customers by every metric. And the NFL adapted to this, by the way. In 2009, the league announced NFL Red Zone, a channel that whips around every game on Sunday afternoon, showing every touchdown live, hosted by Scott Hansen. Red Zone was built explicitly for fantasy players. The tagline was literally, "See every touchdown from every game." If you had five players spread across four different games, Red Zone let you track all of them at once. And Thursday Night Football? Well, same exact logic. More primetime games meant more viewing windows, which meant more ad revenue and more reasons for fantasy football players to stay glued to their screen. The league pushed for mandatory injury reports, not just for gambling transparency, but because fantasy football players needed to know if their running back was questionable for Sunday. The NFL's rule changes over the decades as well. It includes opening up the passing game in 1978, protecting quarterbacks and receivers. They made offenses more explosive and more predictable. That's fantasy catnip, by the way. Critics have argued for years that the league has literally changed how football is played to make it more fantasy-friendly. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but what I can tell you is that the money is staggering. The fantasy sports industry in the United States generates more than $10 billion a year in revenue. This year, they expect over 36 million Americans to play fantasy football. Pretty staggering to me, honestly. The interesting part is that the NFL doesn't get a direct cut of your league's entry fee, because it doesn't really need to. Fantasy football makes the NFL's television rights way more valuable, just because it turns casual fans into obsessive viewers who watch for 7 hours every Sunday. Good friends of mine in San Francisco, Mike and Mel, apparently, are part of this crew. When the NFL's total revenue cleared $23 billion last year, fantasy football was a big part of how it got there. The perfect bookend to this story came in August of 2025, when ESPN acquired NFL Network, NFL Red Zone, and the NFL's official fantasy football platform. In exchange, the NFL got a 10% equity stake in ESPN, valued at roughly $2.5 billion. The league that once didn't even acknowledge fantasy football now trades pieces of its broadcast infrastructure for a chunk of the company that runs the official fantasy game. And by the way, the last surviving original member of the Gopple League, Andy Musalimas, the guy who took the game public, got himself kicked out for changing the rules, and then he proved he was right. He played his final fantasy game in 2012. He was 88 years old. Shout out to that guy, because I love fantasy football. The NFL kicks off tonight with the Seahawks and Patriots. I am beyond excited. And if you're in a fantasy football league, make sure to talk trash to your friends, watch the games, and have fun with it, because that's what it's all about. Stay informed, stay curious, and we'll see you tomorrow.